You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
A couple of years ago, I had an interesting experience when I had a couple in my office. They were there to work on their marriage, or at least that's what they claimed. They both said that they wanted to get back into the marriage to have a happy marriage, and they both really wanted to move forward. But then one of them kind of looked at me with a funny expression and said, "You know, I've been thinking about this one question over and over in my mind." And when he told me his question, his wife immediately said, "I've been asking the same thing in my mind, so if we can solve that, maybe we can get somewhere." And my response was, that single question, that one question that you have floating in your head, is the reason you are so stuck. In fact, I think that one question probably wrecks more marriages than any other question you might have in your head. And here's the problem. That is the wrong question. So you might want to know what that question is. But before I get to that, let me tell you that part of my hope was that they would find a way back to their relationship through both deciding how to move forward, through each one saying, here's how I'm willing to move forward. Here's how I'm willing to step into this. The problem is their question was a roadblock to that particular perspective. And it might be a roadblock in your mind. It may also be a roadblock in your spouse's mind. And here's the interesting thing. It's a question that doesn't come up before you get married. It's not a question that even comes up when you're getting married. It only comes up after you're married. And it's the very switch that happens from the place of wanting to be married to the place of being married that creates the problem. Now, let me also say that it's a natural question to wonder. The problem is this question, once we start pondering it, begins to gain more and more strength, so much so that it creates a way that we begin to view the other person and the other person's actions. And that's the problem. When you're looking at your spouse and asking this question, and when you're looking at your spouse and the history, you're asking this question rather than a more helpful question, one that you actually have some control over and one that can unlock things. Now, let me also tell you that whenever I talk about this, people automatically go to the opposite. This is how we often try to prove things wrong. If what is kind of the point, somebody tells you that's wrong and it's a question you're already having, you look to the exact opposite to prove it wrong. It's kind of the straw man argument where you try to create the proof of what you're already thinking by pointing to the fallacy of the opposite. So let me already say that I'm not looking for the opposite. I'm going to tell you where I think it's easier to land. And with all that having been said, let me tell you what this couple was wondering. Each of them were asking this one basic question. What am I getting out of this? They both said, what am I getting out of this? That's what I've been wondering. What am I getting out of this relationship? What am I getting out from this other person? What is this other person giving for me? Or as a song from my high school days asked the question, what have you done for me lately? Right? And that's how they were judging whether the relationship was working or not. So how does this question come about? And why is it such a sticker? Well, let me go back to remind you about probably how your relationship came into being. My guess is that you met this other person, the spouse, but at that point, just the other person, and you were attracted to them. I remember the same thing for my wife when, you know, she came into my room. I'd met her maybe once on campus. We were in college, and I was just kind of flopped on my bed, throwing a ball up and down, I believe, just staring at the ceiling, waiting for us to go out. We were going to go out as a group. A group of us were going to a movie that night. So we're going to go grab dinner at McDonald's, I'm guessing. I'm pretty sure that's true. And then we're going to a movie. And I can tell you the movie was The Color of Money. It was October of that year. And so it was also World Series time. And I know that because the friend that my wife had, she was a transfer student on the campus, and my friend wanted to watch the ballgame and not be spending a lot of time talking to her. And so he said, hey, my friends are going to a movie. Why don't you go down and join them? And so she came down and asked if she could come along. And when she walked in the room, I remember having met her, but I also remember going, wow, that's someone interesting. You know, she came in and asked if she wanted to, if we would let her go with us to the movie. And so the next piece was that I thought, wow, this is kind of an interesting person. We'll get to the movie, and I kind of managed to finagle my way so I was sitting beside her. That was the start. I was interested in her. I don't know at that point if she was very interested in me, but as the night progressed, we had some conversation. And then after that, we had some more discussion, and over time, we both decided that we kind of had an interest in each other, and so we went out on some dates, and we went out on more dates, and we became exclusively dating. And the whole time, I was thinking, how can I show this person that I'm interested? How can I make sure this person knows that I'm interested in her? And over time, you keep adding on to that. That's the nature of how we build into connection. Connection begins step by step as you ask the question, how can I show more care and love? And at the same time, you're seeing some signs that the other person has some interest back. But your predominant piece is, what else can I put into this relationship? And at some point, you may say, you know what? I love this person so much that I want to spend the rest of my life with this person, loving on them, being in a relationship with them, making sure that this person knows that they're loved. And so you get married. That's what we did. And at that wedding ceremony, you might miss the fact that the vows are not talking about how you're always going to feel love and how you're always going to want to love the other person. It's about choosing to do that. It's about choosing to love the other person in tough days and in healthy days and sick days and good days and all those other days. In fact, it kind of makes it all the days, right? If you think about those vows of healthy days and unhealthy days, of sick days and sick and healthy days, right? And poor and wealthy days and good and bad days. What's left, right? We've promised to love this person by acting towards them in loving ways and keeping everybody else at arm's length, which also is not saying that there will never be anybody out there that you go, wow, that person's attractive, but that you won't allow that person into the relationship. That's the vow you make of saying, what am I going to put into this relationship? I'm going to love this other person. I'm going to protect the relationship. And then you go into the world, and the trouble begins because we begin to say, what am I getting out of this? And it usually starts in small ways. Maybe there's a feeling of rejection over maybe intimacy one night, and you go, wow, I'm not getting what I want out of the intimacy, at least not in that moment. Or maybe you hit a tough point where somebody is not bringing in the resources in the house that you want them to, and you go, wow, you know, what are they bringing in of all the work I'm doing? Or maybe you start judging it in other areas of how you take care of the house or so many other ways that we begin to ask the question, what's the other person putting in? What am I getting out of this? And that's the problem. As soon as you start asking the question, you stop looking for what they're putting into it, and you start looking for the places they're not putting into it. We're rarely asking that question genuinely. We're trying to find a way to prove that they're not putting in their fair share. That's where it breaks down. So we start asking the question. We shift from how am I showing love to how am I being loved? What am I getting out of this? That's a shift from putting in, what can I put into this relationship, to getting out. What am I getting out of this relationship? Now think about that, how that happens in other important relationships in your life. Think about that with parenting, for instance. You're dealing with kids, and at different points, if you're always saying, you know, what am I getting out of this parenting thing? You're going to say a lot of heartache and a lot of headache, right? And a lot of stress and not a lot else, but you don't stop because of that. Why? Because you've made in your mind a commitment to that child, to raise that child and make that child healthy. That's kind of what we're doing. In fact, that's on my Thriveology podcast. Right now, I'm talking about parenting and how to raise thriving, resilient kids. And let me tell you, it's not about how your kids are going to give to you and how you're going to get out of that parenting relationship, but what are you putting in? So with our kids, we don't ask, what am I getting out of this? How about with your parents? Most people listening to this are probably in that sandwich generation where you got young ones and your parents are aging, and you're probably not saying, you know, what are my parents doing for me now? Now, you may be able to think back and say, well, you know, I kind of owe them for all that they put into it. But isn't that true with a spouse? Can you not look back and say, wow, you know, my spouse was loving me a lot back then? But we don't do that. We don't use that same judgment with the other important relationships in our life. We don't ask that about our kids. We don't ask it about our parents. You might ask it about friends, but my guess is you have different friends, some that you know that you're there for them more than they're there for you, and others that are probably more there for you than you for them. That's just kind of the nature of friendships. But a marriage is a very different piece. A marriage is about having committed to get through life together, because it's easier to get through life together, and it's a whole lot more fun to get through life together. And because this is the person you've chosen to build that life with. See, the problem is we have this judgment place where we always want to feel that stomach feel, right? The one I felt when my now wife was just a girl on campus, a woman on campus, who walked into my room and I went, wow, that person, right? And it's the same thing that we want to feel, that's that infatuation. When she walked into my room and my stomach did flip-flops, it was not because we were in love. It was because I was attracted. I was infatuated with this person. And that's how it starts. But it can't stay there. And that's the problem. We have this myth that if the infatuation is no longer there, the love's no longer there. Rather than recognizing that the question is always, what can I invest? So here's the danger. You may be saying, wait a minute, if I'm never getting anything out of this relationship, what's it worth? So I have two responses. First, don't go to the opposite. The power of this is if both people are saying, what can I put into this relationship? Then it takes care of itself. But if you've been on pause for a long time and your marriage has gotten into trouble, you may have to say, you know what, for a while I'm going to have to put in without expecting to get out. It's kind of like if you're building a business, but you've kind of let it go for a while, you might have to put in some extra resources. You might have to build it back up to the place where you're getting your investment back, where you're getting a profit back. But that also raises this other piece, that when you start asking that question, you make the relationship transactional. Transactional means, is there a balance sheet to this? You know, is there a balance to the input and inflow and outflow? Or, you know, a lot of times people don't want a balance even. They want more coming to them than they have to put out. And so that's kind of the nature of this. You know, when we are asking this question of what am I getting out of this, we lead to an investment kind of perspective on this. Whenever we make a marriage transactional, you're looking for the winner and the loser. And you're looking for what am I putting in versus what are you putting in, and you create a balance sheet in your mind. The balance sheet is the danger point, because there are always times in a marriage where it's not going to be entirely balanced in lots of different ways. Maybe somebody is busy with a project, or busy raising the kids, or down because of an illness or some other piece that keeps it from being balanced. But there's another piece to it. And that is the fact that we're always judging based on what we're putting in, thinking the other person ought to be putting in the same type of thing. Remember Gary Chapman's idea of love languages. Such a powerful idea, because what Gary says is that we have these languages of love that we speak, and we speak the one that makes sense to us. I speak my language. My spouse speaks her language. And if we don't have a match on those two pieces, I'm not going to hear her love, and she's not going to hear my love unless we look through that lens. And so the problem is, many times as a couple is having this thought process, they're missing the loving actions the other person is doing, because it doesn't make it to their love ears. It doesn't make it to that communication piece. In fact, the interesting thing, back to my couple in my office, both of them began to challenge that the other person each thought the other wasn't putting their fair share in. And so each one began to name the things that they felt like they were putting in, and began to name the things they felt the other person was not putting in. And what was apparent to me is that neither was hearing what the other person was putting in. Both were looking for what wasn't getting put in. In other words, even in their process of trying to judge whether they're getting a fair investment out of it, a fair return on their investment, they were judging it on things that the other person didn't even know about. They were judging it on whether, you know, there was this equality based on actions in their mind, not actions in reality. Many times somebody is being as loving as they can be, but it's not heard by a spouse because it's not in the language or because it's not in a spot that makes sense to them. For instance, in this couple, the woman said, "Think about how many things I do for the household and take care of all those other pieces." And he said, "Well, that's not about our relationship." And she said, "Well, what do you do?" He said, "Well, think about how I bring home a good paycheck so that our family can live in its place." And she said, "Well, that's not about the relationship either." And they began to realize that each one was seeing their daily actions as actions of love. It just wasn't being felt by the other person. So they began to talk about how they needed to connect with each other in ways that each understood. So to get to the end of their story, they discovered that they spoke different love languages in some areas. They spoke the same love language in other areas and yet didn't hear it. For instance, both of them were about acts of service. You know, her taking care of the household and him going off and making a paycheck. That was an act of service that the other person didn't see. And then they began to see, even within their love language, they had to understand those actions. And then they had to talk about the ways they liked to be loved, so the other person was aware of that. Because here's the interesting thing. Everybody is desperate to feel loved. And most people, at least until they get to the kind of the tail end of the process, are wanting the spouse to feel loved, wanting to figure out how to let that be known. And when we ask this question, it keeps us stuck because we're looking for the proof. But we're really looking for the lack of proof. We're really trying to prove to ourselves that we're not getting a fair deal, balance sheet. We're not getting what's owed us, investment theory. Instead, we're constantly feeling like we're putting in and putting in and putting in and putting in and not able to get it back. And I would just challenge you to ask the question, what can I put in? And am I missing the love coming my way? If you're stuck on this process, please check out my resources. One is the interview I did with Gary Chapman about love language, where you realize that sometimes you have to go a ways without expecting the love back in order to rebuild, in order to feel, as he calls it, the love tank. But also, I have the Save the Marriage system, which is built on the idea that connection is the path back. Connection is the lifeblood of marriage. Disconnection is the damage that comes out of that. And the way through it is back to connection. So if you're interested in that process, check that out at savethemarriage.com. While you're going through the process of getting the system, I will give you, at least right now, while we have the opportunity, one of my staff coaches will contact you and give you a free get started session. Not only that, but if you sign up now, I'll give you a free week of my VIP virtual coaching session. So, I mean, these are valuable pieces that can add to the process to help you get forward as quickly as possible. So you can go grab all of that at savethemarriage.com. And you can check the link for Gary Chapman's interview with me about love languages in the show notes, or you can go to my blog, savethemarriageblog.com, and just do a search for Gary Chapman, and you'll find that. But what I hope for you is that you recognize the danger of this question and decide that if you're asking the question, what am I getting out of this, you're headed for a dead end. The opportunity is to ask the question instead, what can I put in? What can I do to bring back the connection? This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at savethemarriage.com.